Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio.
Hello and welcome to episode 53 of the Lesbian Book Club with me, your host, Claire Lydon. This month we have a terrific interview with US author Monica McCallan, and you're going to hear that interview I did very shortly. But first, we're going to see what's hot in the US and UK Amazon lesbian fiction charts, as well as finding out what's going on in the world of lesfic and what's going on in the world of me. And there's lots and lots of news in lesfic and me, so let's get on. First up, the Amazon charts, topping the charts in the US and the UK, as I record this on August the 8th, is Harper Bliss and her new book, A Lesson in Love. Now, I know this one pretty darn well, seeing as I wrote one of the other books in this series. A Lesson in Love is part of the Village Romance series, which features three books, all set in the same fictional village of Upper Chewford in the Cotswolds. But all three books are written by three different authors, and they can all be read as standalone stories too. Harper's book is an age gap romance between an Oxford professor and a PhD student in her late 20s. Now there's class, there's heat, there's drama, there's emotion, and there's also apparently Harper's longest ever sex scene she's ever written in her life, and she's written quite a few, so do you need more prodding to get this book? I don't think you do. I've read it. It's a really great ending to the trilogy. And the other two books in the series are also doing well in the UK and the US. And the other two books are A Taste of Love by me, which I've launched since we last chatted on this podcast, and A Shot at Love by T.B. Markinson. My book, A Taste of Love, is a small town romance featuring a city slicker who's come to town to run an ice cream shop and the local village sweetheart who runs the gin distillery shop. It's a family drama as well as a romance, and it should raise a smile as well as your heart rate. Thanks to everyone who's bought it and reviewed it so far. Your support's really, really appreciated. T.B. Markinson's A Shot at Love kicked off the series beautifully, and it's brilliantly funny, featuring a cast of quirky characters and a terrifically stuttery heroine. All three books are great. You can read them all in one go because they're all out. They all came out 2 weeks apart, but now they're all out. And now you've got a whole series to devour if you haven't started yet. So who needs Netflix, frankly, when you've got the Village Romance series? Also doing well in the charts is Max Ellendale and her book Heart and Stocker. Now, this one is as far from the Cotswolds as can be. It's got a woman in a cowboy hat on the front, and it's the story of a vet and a US Marshal, and their names are Willa and Dax, and they are pleasingly American names, aren't they? Willa and Dax are two broken people who meet each other, and somehow life takes them on a journey they didn't expect to each other. So when you're done with the quaint UK village location, jump on over to this set in the rural US. Still at the top of the charts and doing well is Melissa Therese's The Arrangement, and that has been sticking around for a fair few weeks now, which is evidence that it's a great story. This one is the tale of Sam and Alexis, the businesswoman and the high-class escort. And frankly, no bad story has ever started with that sentence now, has it? So if you haven't given that one a go, give it a whirl. In the UK, The Secret Diaries of Anne Lister are still propping up the charts, and frankly, why not? Gentleman Jack is doing great business around the globe, so I'm really thrilled for Saran Jones and also for the screenwriter whose name escapes me. Oh my God, she's one of our most famous. It'll come back to me. But it's terrific that a lesbian-fronted period drama is doing such great business all around the globe, and so Anne Lister's diaries to be at the top of the charts. I was very happy to be held off the number one spot in the UK by them, and I'm sure Harper is too. So that's the chart roundup for July 2019, slipping a little bit as we have into August 2019. So as well as being a big month in the charts, July is also a big month for lesbian fiction because in June we had the Lambda Literary Awards, and in July we have the Golden Crown Literary Society Awards. And this year they took place in Pittsburgh, and many authors and readers flocked there to celebrate lesbian fiction, and why not? Now, there are quite a few winners, so if you want to check them all out, just go on to the Golden Crown Literary Society website and you can find them all there. If you really search, they haven't made it easy. But I'll give you a few of the highlights. So winners for the Contemporary Romance Long category are E.J. Noyes for Gold, Jay's Just for Show, and Heather Blackmore for It's Not a Date. And Jay and E.J. Noyes have both been guests on this very podcast. Contemporary Romance Mid-Length winners included Carson Tate for Pursuit of Happiness, Georgia Beers for Blend, Jeannie Levig for A Wish Upon a Star, and Missouri Vaughan for Love at Cooper's Creek. Contemporary Romance Short winners included Chris Bryant for Breakthrough, Claire Hyten-Steverson for The Promise, and Jerry Hill for The Neighbour. And Mystery Thriller winners went to Carrie Hunter for Alias and Kristen Lepionka for What You Want to See. Finally, best debut novels, as judged by the GCLS, were Anna Burke's Compass Rose, which I've heard really great things of, so probably worth checking out. Alex K. Thorne for Chasing Stars, and Lola Keeley for The Music and The Mirror. So what have I been up to since we last chatted? Well, July was a big old month for me, I've got to say. So I launched A Taste of Love, and that's been very exciting because I've been working on this book for quite a while now. The idea for the series came around maybe 9 months to a year ago, but we've all been working on it in different ways for the past sort of 4 or 5 months. And now it's all come together. We've launched all 3 books in a 6 weeks period and it's gone really well. So that's great. But obviously it's a bit stressful and a bit very time consuming launching a book, and a bit nerve wracking as well. So really glad to have got that done and glad it went well. But as well as doing that, I went away. I was at 2 weddings in July, one in Germany, one in Essex. They went really well. I sang at one of the weddings. So that was a bit stressful as well, but it went really well. And I also went on a holiday. And I also spoke at Happy Valley Pride. Now, there's a lot of prides going on in the world these days. And in the UK, the big ones are London, Brighton and Manchester. But Happy Valley Pride was just such a brilliant experience. I have to say, it was terrific. It's kind of known as the lesbian capital of the world. And so I thought that it would probably be worth going up there because I thought there might be quite a lot of lesbian fiction fans. And I was right. 6 of us were on stage. We did nearly 2 hours of readings and Q&As, and the audience was terrific. There was probably about 80 or 90 people there, which was astonishing. I have never spoken to such a massive crowd just for lesbian fiction. I've spoken to a bigger crowd for LGBTQ event, but not just for lesbian fiction. So that was really, really, really gratifying and great to know that people were out to support us. We sold some books and it was great to meet some readers, and it was just a really engaged and fun afternoon. So that was great. And we stuck around for the whole weekend and it was a really well organised and very welcoming thing. So if you're around Hebden Bridge next year, go along to Happy Valley Pride, really worthwhile. Also this month, I commissioned You're My Kind as an audiobook, which, as you're listening to podcasts, I'm sure you'll be excited to hear. The narrator is going to be Nicola Victoria Vincent. I asked around in lesbian fiction circles and she was apparently a popular choice. And so I'm working directly with her. So I'm excited to see what comes of that. That should be ready and out in the stores maybe late September, early October. So she's going to be recording it in August, and then I'll quality proof it in September, and it will take a little while to go through Audible's processes, but it'll eventually pop out the other end as a finished product. So that's very exciting. Also this, so what am I doing this month? Well, I'm going to be looking to dust off Made in London, which I wrote quite a while ago this year, but it's up to about the third edit. It's been to an editor, so I'm going to get that one ready to launch in probably October, I imagine. I'm also still carrying on with my Lesbians Who Write podcast. So if you like hearing my voice on this one, do hop over to lesbianswhowrite.com and subscribe on your podcast app. It's me and TB Markinson talking about lesbian fiction and the job of being a full-time writer in the modern world. So it's a peek behind the curtain of the writer's life. So if that sounds like something you're interested in, do pop on over to there and subscribe. Right, that's it for now. Let's get on with the interview with Monica McCallan. So joining me today is US author Monica McCallan. Stumbled on your name, whose latest novel, Good Spin, is a mashup of friends to lovers and the fake girlfriend trope. And who doesn't love those? Monica has been writing and publishing for 2 years, and her other novels include Back to the Start, Better Than a Dream, and Sweat Equity. She can't parallel park to save her life, enjoys playing pool, and has enjoyed every second of the craft beer explosion these last few years. She lives in Philadelphia with her partner and two tiny dogs. So welcome, Monica. How are you today?
I am very good. Thank you. This is actually, I don't know if we discussed this, but my first podcast that I've ever been a part of. So very excited.
Well, that is very exciting. Yeah. It's great to have you. And I'm glad to pop your podcast cherry.
I know. I didn't know if that was appropriate to say on the podcast, but those were the first words that came to my mind as well.
Let's go with it. So I'm totally with you on the craft beer thing as well. I'm a big beer fan. My favourite's a pale ale or an IPA. What's your favourite?
Oh, exactly that. Have to be a little more cautious these days with what I'm drinking because it's very hot here during the summer and I don't do as much physical activity. So I have gotten into some pilsners, which are much lighter and that I've really been enjoying. But yeah, when it comes down to like brass tacks and what I would really want to drink if calories were no option or worry, it would be pale ales and IPAs. And I had lived in California for a number of years, and Northern California was just really on the craft beer explosion incredibly early. So they have a number of fantastic breweries like Sierra Nevada and Lagunitas that just, my go-to is a Sierra Nevada pale ale and a Lagunitas IPA. Those are just it for me. I haven't found anything, even being back on the East Coast, that have quite compared to those.
Oh, well, I like both of those. So that's good, isn't it? It's a good base to start off this interview with. And yeah, if you come over to Europe, you'll find a whole host of craft beer. I just came back from holiday in Germany and Poland and Czech Republic, and even they've got a lot of different craft ales. So yeah, me and my wife are big into it. But anyway, enough about beer. We're not here to talk about beer, although we could. So what have you been up to today thus far? And tell me a little bit about where you are and what you can see from where you're sitting.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, I'm in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So back here after a fairly long journey away on the West Coast. But right now I am looking into my neighbor's backyard from our home office because it is, a very old city compared to the UK, but as far as US standards go. Mm-hmm. So lots of brick row homes, really cool. We actually just bought this house within the last year, okay. But the home was built in 1875, so it's really nice. I don't tend to love inclement weather, and it's strange being back on the East Coast where there is so much, but anytime I get a little fearful of what's happening, I just tell myself this house has been here since 1875. It is very unlikely this is the storm that's taken it down, and we just go from there.
Yeah. See, that is a good thing to think, actually, yeah, because, it's been through worse, I'm sure.
So far, today has been good. Got up and took my dogs on a walk this morning. Well, one of them, the little one, doesn't really like to go anywhere. He's like 5.5 pounds. But we took the one that we refer to as our real dog on a morning walk just because it has been pretty hot here. So if you don't, get out before 8 a.m. or after 8 p.m., it's not really comfortable for us or the dog. So we're trying to build that into our daily schedule for as long as we need with the weather as it is. Mm-hmm. And then I did some work, which I don't know if we're going to chat about in a later question, but I do have a full-time job outside of writing, so wanted to get a jump on that this morning. But I do work, remotely for a startup still based in the Bay Area, so did a little bit of that so that I could fully enjoy this podcast here with you.
Okay, good. So you've had a productive day already, so you could just relax after this, totally. So
would love that.
With a nice pale ale, obviously. So tell me a little bit about your writing journey and how you got started.
Yeah, so you covered it in the beginning with the 2-year time frame, and I spent my 20s kind of figuring out who I was and what I wanted to be, doing the whole, you know, coming out thing, moving to California, because I decided that was a great use of my time. And it really was. I enjoyed it a ton, met my partner there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I got a little bit more settled in my life and, you know, just kind of the day to day and stuff like that. But there was still this, you know, little bit of a nagging that I wasn't really personally fulfilled. So I had some hobbies like pool, as you mentioned, had my partner, my dogs, you know, we were planning for the future, all of that good stuff. But, you know, I really wanted something else, and I had been reading a lot of romance novels just because I had a little bit more time. And growing up, it had always, when people asked what I wanted to be when I was little, it was either a detective or a writer. But, you know, I think as a child, you don't really conceptually understand what goes into writing. Mm-hmm. So I kind of put it on the back burner, and, you know, I've written in a lot of the roles that I've had professionally, whether it's blog posts or copywriting, marketing material, stuff like that. But, you know, I have always wanted to write a novel, and I decided that there was no time like the present to do that. So I sat down, I wrote it in about 6 weeks, and that was the first one. And, you know, I haven't looked back. I really did get bitten by the bug. I loved it. I loved the feedback, good or bad. I loved connecting with people on Twitter. I really loved being immersed in the world of writing. And it's just so strange to think that, you know, 2 years ago, I didn't really realize it existed to the degree and the connection that writers in the community have with one another and all of the tools, especially for independent authors. So I've enjoyed learning about that part of writing almost as much as the act of writing itself. So it's been really, really great.
Yeah, because definitely, because I think if you are an independent author, doing the business side is just as important as doing the writing, isn't it?
Yeah, if you want it to be a full-time thing. So like I mentioned, for me right now, it's not. So I can be a little bit more, you know, fly by the seat of my pants. And I don't do audiobooks yet. I don't even really print physical copies of my books. Mm-hmm. But yeah, as I consider my next steps and figure out if I do want writing to be a full-time career for me at this point, you know, those are all definitely calculated moves that I'll have to make within the world. So yeah, understanding those things and understanding tools and stuff just as important as being able to actually write a good book if you are the one that's going to be marketing it on the back end as well.
Yeah, definitely. But it's good that you've got all those things in your sights, so you know the next steps should you want to take this full time. How would you describe your books to someone who's never read one?
Yeah, so I love this question, and I spent a lot of time thinking about it. And it sounds very unromantic, the phrase that I'm going to use, but I very much consider myself a pragmatic realist. So I love the happy ending, but I'm very cynical. I think if anybody's read, you know, some of my books, they get that. That really shines through in my characters. So I think that good people make bad choices, and I think that that's important to write about. You know, my books have a lot of introspection, a lot of internal dialogue from the characters. And it's, you know, my books tend to be rooted in internal obstacles to overcome, like how the characters feel about the situation versus external motivations that are thrust upon the characters and keep, you know, two perfect people apart from each other. Mm-hmm. I very much think I write about fallible creatures, and I like that in my writing. So yeah, you know, you're gonna get the happy ending. That's very important to me. But I think that love takes a lot of hard work, and I think it takes a lot of figuring out who you are as an individual before you can be an us with somebody else. So I really try and make all of that shine through in my books, and a lot of it isn't about, you know, just the characters getting together by the end. It's about each of the MCs, you know, figuring out who they are as people and who they want to be in the future and with this other person that they found.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds to be like the perfect romance book. There you go. You see bumps and flaws along the way, but they'll both have a beautiful journey. It's all about a journey, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think that kind of came across in the book that I read of yours before this interview, which I really enjoy, called Good Spin. And that employs the fake girlfriend trope as well as friends to lovers. So tell me a bit about that one, because that's the one currently doing well in the charts.
So, you know, I've always loved a good fomance. I know that celebrity fomances tend to be like the most popular, but I didn't want to write that quite at this point, because there have been a lot of really great ones that have come out in the last 6 months to a year. But, you know, I wanted to write that idea of two people who, you know, mimic these acts of affection so everybody can kind of see it playing out, but there's still this sense of holding back. It was a trope that I had never delved into in any of my other books, and it was something that for me was really exciting to have the opportunity to write about. And just because it was new, you know, one of the things that I've been most surprised to find about myself as an author is it is such a growing kind of thing. Every book is not going to be the same. And it's, you know, when me reading books as a reader, I would get, you know, like, oh, that was different than this book. Like, why didn't I like it as much? Or why did I like it more? But writers are just people who learn and grow as they write and as they're figuring out, you know, what their writing style and voice is. And I think that, you know, to date, Goodspin is the best reflection of the new voice that I am working to craft and been learning to understand, which is, you know, a lot of snarky dialogue, which I think we're going to talk about in a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yeah, just working with tropes that I think are fun, because at the end of the day, you know, writing is still a passion project for me. Mm-hmm. So I write things that I want to write about, and I write things that excite me, and this idea of two people that are obviously attracted to one another, and kind of projecting that to other people, but still holding back around each other and kind of even in how they're trying to think about it, was something that was really exciting for me to write about.
Mm, yeah. And I think, as you say, everybody does love a fomance. I love a fomance. Who doesn't?
I don't see how you couldn't.
No.
That's actually the one trope that I've never heard anybody say that they hate. You know, there's a lot of strong reactions from people on certain romance tropes. But yeah, I think everybody can get behind a good fomance.
Mm. And I've never written one either. So you're making me think maybe I should write it because I love to read it. So yeah, definitely. As I say, sticking with a good spin, it's quite a slow burn, which I really liked, as you build up the fomance-ness. I'm sure that's a word. Is it a tactic you've employed in other novels or just in this one? I mean, I haven't read your other novels, so are they fast or slow?
I would like to say it really depends on where my characters are at when the book opens. In the first book I wrote, you know, the characters hooked up the first night they met. But that has not happened in any of the novels after that. But, you know, based on the intensity of the situation the characters are thrown into, sometimes things move a little bit faster. If it's a second chances romance and they have a previous history, or I wrote a book specifically around Valentine's Day, so it was only about a week of time that was passing between the characters. Mm-hmm. So everything was, you know, kind of happening at like a catalytic speed, just because they were spending a ton of time together, you know, almost all of their time for that whole week. But it really depends on, you know, what I think the characters would do or what makes sense within that story. So, you know, definitely as a writer, I like writing slow burn because it's this push and pull, and you know that it's going to make the payoff more gratifying at the end. But obviously, as a reader, I absolutely hate that. But, you know, for the same feeling that, you know, it is very gratifying at the end, but you're just like waiting and you just want to get through and you want to see them together so badly. So it's two sides of the same coin. And I think that, you know, putting the words out there as a writer has allowed me to be more understanding of that as a reader, because some people love the angst, some people love the burn, and some people don't. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, I think it's been very fun to write about, and I'm sure that that will infuse some of my future works as well.
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely, it's fun to write, and like you say, it's beautifully painful to read, isn't it? When you're just like, get together already, but you know, then the book would be very short. So that's what you have
right.
to think. And the book is set in Hawaii. The fomance is based around one of the main characters has a friend who's getting married, and she asks her friend to come along and pretend to be her girlfriend. So tell me you went to Hawaii and spent a week there researching this book, right?
I didn't. So, and I can't believe that this is when I get this question, because truly, this book and them going to Hawaii is the only city that I've ever written about that I haven't actually been to myself. So I'm glad that I was able to kind of capture the essence of it. And it was the first book that, you know, I really had to do a lot of research based on the climate, the weather, you know, how long it would actually take to get to a more remote lagoon on an island, that kind of stuff. Yeah. You know, what they actually let you rent at hotels if you're at a resort and need stuff to take with you. So from a research-based perspective, it was very fun to write. But yeah, it really, really made me want to go to Hawaii as well. And I think it was on my mind because I have two good friends who actually just eloped to Hawaii, and they've been talking about it for a while. So Hawaii has been on my mind for a while, and I thought it was kind of the perfect backdrop for a book like this. I know it would be, you know, released in the summer, and I wanted something kind of light, something fun. I think that, you know, a beautiful backdrop and a scenic backdrop really just helps paint that so much better.
Totally. And like you say, I've never been to Hawaii either, but it sprang off the page to me. So I think you did a really good job creating the sunshine, breezy island feel. I thought it would be the perfect poolside read. And as you said, that's what you were going for. Do you have like a favorite read or author you take on such a vacation?
You know, I think if you're gonna do like a fun summer read, it's gotta be Casting Lacey for me by Elle Spencer. And I know that you interviewed her as well a few podcasts ago. But I haven't really found, you know, and it wasn't a light book. It was very emotionally heavy, but just the backdrop of LA and the sunshine. I just read Beautiful Dreamer by Melissa Braden, which she captures the essence of kind of the romance and the magic and the beauty of small towns so incredibly well. So this was kind of a summer into fall type deal that she had been discussing in that book. So those were two that, you know, it's nice. We have a little yard in our house in Philadelphia. So while I haven't gotten to the beach yet this summer, I love to sit outside with a good book and read as often as I possibly can.
And yeah, definitely. Elle Spencer's book was a great one. Although, like you said, I'm not sure it's a poolside read. It was very angsty. I'm not a lover of like loads and loads of angst, but I did love that book. And Melissa Braden, she's a fantastic writer. So two good choices. So you write, as we touched on earlier, you write very good dialogue, witty dialogue, and just plain old snark well. And like you said, you make me laugh on Twitter, which is one of the reasons I wanted to interview you. So is this something that you have to craft to get into your books, and does it come naturally? And can you give any tips for getting humour into writing?
I mean, so one, that's quite frankly one of the nicest things you could ever say to me, because I spend a lot of time tweeting just wondering if it's going out into the ether.
No, you do make me laugh.
So, you know, it's nice that people are actually reading it and laughing. That's even better. So, you know, I don't spend too terribly much time trying to be funny, but I do try and recognize when something funny happens. So a lot of that is, you know, much to the dismay of my partner, if something happens to us together in real life that I think is quite funny, I'm going to tweet about it. And I always, you know, give her a heads up that I'm doing that. But, you know, I don't think there's a need to reinvent the wheel. You know, I'm not a comedian. I don't make up jokes. I just try and find humor within the world that we live in. So I think if there was any advice to be given, it's that the world is a really funny place already. If you're open to it, you don't need to create humor. Like, it's all around you, just depending on your perspective of the situation. So if you don't see yourself as a funny person, just look for the humor that's already there in the world and kind of capitalize on that momentum, you know, and to the way I write into my character. So I had discussed a little bit earlier about, you know, my journey as a writer and figuring out what makes sense. And my first release, I just got absolutely hammered with some negative reviews because there wasn't enough dialogue. And that was absolutely true. You know, all of that feedback was so warranted, and I needed to put the book out there in the world world to see that. So one of the things, first and foremost, that I've focused on in every follow-up book is to improve my dialogue and to improve the way that, you know, my characters engage with one another and kind of moving through the experience through how they talk, not just telling you, you know, what they talked about or something like that. So writing dialogue went from being, you know, my least favorite and most uncomfortable thing to do to the thing that I absolutely love to write. I can just get lost writing pages and pages of characters like fighting with one another or going back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really interesting to know. Yeah, because you wouldn't think that. I guess probably if I read your catalogue, I'd see the evolution of the dialogue coming through. But yeah, you really hit the mark in Good Spin. So, and I think like you, dialogue is one of the first things I put down, and then I write everything else around it.
Yeah, and it just, you know, it wasn't how I started originally thinking mm-hmm. about writing, because I mentioned that there's a lot of introspection and I'm very introspective yeah. in my life, but I'm also very chatty when I'm around people. But, you know, working from home, I spend a lot more time by myself than I do with other people these days. So a lot of what's going on is just kind of in your own head. And I think, you know, one of the exciting things to realize about my characters is, you know, words and dialogue, they're a bridge, but they're mm-hmm. also a wall. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of the snark of my characters can be attributed to that idea that I mentioned, that, you know, my characters all have internal issues that they're trying to work through. And I think that, you know, the dialogue is really representative of the closed off nature that they have. They'll say a lot, but they won't really tell you anything, except that they don't want to talk about it, is kind of how a lot of the dialogue comes through. And for whatever reason, I find that so fun to write, the banter and like the circular kind of conversations that people have where like they get nowhere, but they're really frustrated with each other by the end.
Top bants is always good in any part of life. And your book, Sweat Equity. Now, I've mentioned this on previous podcasts when it was high up in the charts, because the title really baffled me when I first saw it, but then I realized it was about personal trainer and I was like, haha. But is there another, it was that the reason behind the title, and tell us a bit about it?
Yeah, so it's actually a double entendre. So Sweat Equity is the first book in a romance series that I'm writing called the Lady Luck Startup Series, which is about three friends that found an app for lesbian or women loving women romance dating. You know, living in San Francisco for 7 years and working at startups of different sizes, I got a lot of firsthand experience. So Sweat Equity is actually a startup term. And I put the definition in the beginning of the book knowing that it could be kind of lost on a lot of people. Right. But it's kind of the non-monetary effort that you put into a new startup or a new venture.
Yeah.
So basically, you know, you get paid in sweat equity. Maybe they can't give you a salary, but they give you a 10% stake in the company. And then, you know, you essentially, and there are very few people that can do this, end up kind of working without pay or at a lower rate of pay than they would typically take, because they do think that this startup is going to do well and then they're going to be a 10% stakeholder, you know, whatever the terms of the arrangement could be. So it ended up being a double entendre because Charlie, one of the other MCs, is a personal trainer. So it actually worked really, really well from that respect. But first and foremost, you know, it is about the startup world, and it's about you know, Avery, Brennan, and Carter, they are the three friends that do this app. And the first book was Avery's. And, you know, it's about kind of the effort that she had to put into something, not really knowing whether or not it would pay off. So on her side, that's, you know, why it was sweat equity. But yeah, then it just worked for Charlie from the physical standpoint as well. And each of the forthcoming titles in that book, there is a natural evolution of the way this kind of works. So sweat equity is the first step, and then vesting period is the middle part where you're working, but you're waiting to see if these options ever kind of become anything. And then the third period is when you do look for an acquisition or to sell your company or go public. And that's what's known in startups as an exit strategy. And it's actually funny, Nicolette Dane has a book out right now called Exit Strategy that takes place in a startup as well. So mine won't be coming out for a year or two, but it's apparently a very hot buzzword right now.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's really interesting. So now I've had things explained. You see, I always like to say this podcast is entertaining, but also educational, and you have just educated. So well done. And just to picking up as well, your character names, I've been struck by your character names, and maybe they're just a little bit more American names than we're used to over in Europe, but like Avery and Emery and Remy and Fallon, I mean, that they sound like great sort of 80s Dynasty Dallas names, which I love, clearly.
I had a Gemma that was for my British fans,
right?
I always loved that name.
But
which,
you know,
not an American name at all.
Yeah, well, no, keep going with the, like, you know, really Americanized names, because I love it. So do you have a way of coming up with these names, or is it just whatever comes to you?
I have a list.
Right.
Oh, man, I have a whole list. Naming characters is one of my most favorite things to do. So, you know, I'll start a book with what I want their names to be. And sometimes that may actually change early on in the novel if I don't feel like it's a good fit anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I definitely like more kind of gender neutral type names for some of the characters. Even though, you know, they all still tend to be like femme presenting, they have names like Charlie or Jordan. And I really like those types of names, and I actually have friends in real life with those names. And then, yeah, the Y kind of ending names, I know what you're talking about, like the Avery and the Emery, they are very uniquely American, so I try not to get too crazy with the spellings,
because mm-hmm.
You can really, really take on a life of its own, and I think I would end up spelling it wrong in, like, half of the novel if I tried to get that crazy. But, yeah, basically, once every year or something, I'll just kind of scroll through a list of names and what kind of people are using and stuff like that. And then I'll pick ones that I feel representative of the characters that I have in my head, but maybe haven't been named yet as I start to flesh out the story a little bit more.
Yeah. Okay. Now that's interesting. Cause the other podcast I do with TB Markinson, which is Lesbians Who Write, we were just talking about how to name characters, and I find it difficult, but you've got a whole list, so you've got it covered. So well done.
I'll be, in the sake of honesty, I will tell you, I'm horrible with last names.
Right.
Like, sometimes I just slap them on after the book is done,
mm-hmm.
Because there hasn't yet been a character where their last name has been very important to it, or that they're called by their last name or something like that. So it's a double-edged sword. For the amount of time I spend on first names, that love is not given to last names.
Okay. So one thing I know from Twitter, I think, is that you're an avid TV watcher. So is there a show? I love taking things from shows for my writing, like just ideas or things that happen in the shows. Is there one that's given you the most ideas for your writing?
I very much take like a framework approach to things. So, you know, maybe I'll see a trope and I'll like it or something like that. But overall, you know, watching TV shows and getting into, like, a couple months ago I got into Lucifer, which was terrible for my mental health because 4 seasons were already out. And I tend to want to, like, consume things when I get into them. I'm going through that right now with Outlander as well,
mm-hmm.
the period romance drama. I don't know if you've watched it. But it's nice when you watch something in sequence like that, because you really, instead of having to wait every week in kind of an episodic format, you just get to watch it all, and you can very clearly get a feel for if this is a good story arc or if this would be within the character. So you're kind of like getting this story on steroids, essentially, because it's all given to you at the speed at which you're willing or committed to watching it.
Mm-hmm.
So I really take a lot away from story arcs, from strong relationships with kind of like tertiary characters. You know, one of the things that I'm really committed to working on, and would, it was a big reason I wanted to write the Lady Luck Startup series, was because I had never, you know, really done what I would call a book with like non-romantic other main characters, or like kind of a group scenario of people. I hadn't done anything you know, I think it's easy to start with the two main characters and maybe have a couple of like tertiary characters while you get your feet wet and figure out your style. Mm-hmm. But it's a lot more cooks in the kitchen or different like tethers of connectivity that you have to worry about like messing up something the more people you add. So that's something that I've been very excited to do. And shows like Wynonna Earp are just absolutely amazing at kind of these bigger cast scenarios mm-hmm. where everybody has their own little storyline, but obviously, you know, Wynonna Earp is the protagonist of the show, but everybody else is just important and necessary. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you couldn't have followed me on Twitter for the last year without hearing me talk about Juli and Tina from Amara Muerte ad nauseum. Mm-hmm. So absolutely loved that that story arc, and there was a lot of inspiration with them in Goodspin and that idea of like friends to lovers.
Yeah.
Because I had never really done a friends to lovers book before. There was always some kind of like previous conflict rooted in the main characters, you know, being around one another at the beginning of the story. So yeah, that was definitely a nod that like, well, we like each other, we get along so well. I had never written anything like that before. But yeah, definitely very, very heavy Juli and Tina inspiration on that.
Okay. You know, that's really interesting to know. And you've said that you're not a full-time writer, which I would say kudos to you for getting as many books out as you have over the last 2 years, because that's some going. And you wrote your first book in 6 weeks. So you clearly, once you get an idea, you can run with it. You've got a process. So tell us a little bit about your process and when you fit in the writing around your actual job.
Yeah, it really depends. You know, I think if you are going to stay committed to something while you do have other life obligations, it's important to have a balance of deadlines and making commitments to yourself, but also being flexible within the reality of those situations. I really do, you know, I try and write when I'm inspired. That's, I think, what all of us would like to be able to do. But, you know, Goodspin was actually a book that I started writing over a year ago, and I shelved it. So it was at like 25,000 words, and I just put it on the back burner to start writing something else. And then I got re-inspired, and I think it was probably by, like, you know, watching Amara Muerte and watching some other TV shows with strong, like, friends to lovers. And I was like, you know, I'm going to pick this back up. So I picked it back up, and I was 25,000 words in, so it took me a little bit of time to get comfortable with the characters and the world again. You know, but after that, it was just really dedicating like every free second that I could, because I was so inspired to finish the book and to write it. But with that being said, I wrapped it up like 2 or 3 weeks. I wrapped it up, and then like 2 or 3 weeks probably after that, like, I didn't write another word. I was waiting for feedback, and I just kind of took a break. And that's something I do. I may go like a month or two without writing.
Okay. It's always interesting to hear the different processes, and especially because you've got a full-time job, right? So you're doing it remotely, so that entails lots of different time zones and things like that?
Yeah. So most of my team is based in California. So yeah, it's a double-edged sword. Mm-hmm. You know, I might respond to a message that comes in at like 8 p.m. my time, but also if I really want to get up in the morning and write for a couple of hours, I can do that. Mm-hmm. Because it is a little bit of a flexible, because it's a fully distributed team, I have the ability to do that. So, you know, I find it much more palatable in terms of my other goals outside of my professional career and having the time to do that. You know, living in a city, I think it's hard to have a commute that's, you know, less than 1 hour one way these days. So I try and look at it as like, hey, you got back 2 hours of your day working remotely. What are you going to spend that doing? And for me, it is usually writing. And then it's just carving out those moments to write, you know, whether it's at the end of the evening, if it's a nice night out, or whether it's going to be a really hot blistering day. And that means, you know, writing from 7 to 9 in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Factor the weather in. These are all things that you generally don't have to do in Europe, although you have. Yeah, we have recently with the heat wave.
yeah,
go on.
I really, really took living in California for granted. You know, so incredibly happy that we moved because we were able to buy a house in Philadelphia and kind of move on with the next phase of our life, which just wasn't a possibility in the Bay Area. But yeah, when we had that heat wave about a week ago, there was definitely a moment sitting in my house where I was like, did I make a horrible decision?
No, but, you know, we've lived to tell the tale, so well done us. You know, over the last couple of years, you've done the writing thing and you're getting feedback and it's very exciting. So is there a favorite thing you've got about this whole writing journey, and what's your least favorite thing?
I really holistically love the whole process. I'll start with my least favorite. I think the most important thing in the writing process is getting, you know, feedback from editors and beta readers. But it's so hard because, you know, I was mentioning how I'll write when I'm really inspired and I'll write a lot. And it's, you know, very similar to what I experience as a reader. If I start a book, I'm finishing that book and then I'm putting it down, probably in one sitting. Like, that is just how my personality is. So I think, you know, based on what I've said before, it's not hard to make that jump that as a writer, that's, you know, I get kind of obsessive with finishing the work. So you just poured so much of yourself into it. And then you get these edits back, and you just have to go through and see how everybody is interpreting what you've written. So I find that actually far more difficult than potentially reading a review, good or bad, about the book, just because it's still so new and so raw, and I've just kind of poured it all out onto the pages. So that's the hardest thing for me, but I think the most important and the most valuable in making the book the best it can be. You know, overall, I really enjoy writing, and I enjoy the ecosystem of everything that goes along with it. I like engaging with people on Twitter. I wrote like a 70,000 word Julian Tina fanfic for fun just because I was so inspired by those characters. I really enjoy 95% about this world, which is why I think that even though I haven't been doing it full time, it's why I've been able to, you know, produce so many books in a short amount of time and stay so attentive to the process and learning and kind of growing my craft, because I do love most things about it.
Yeah, and I think that definitely comes over in the writing as well, so that's great. And what is there a piece of writing advice that you've been given that you think that is the one that I'm going to stick on the wall and live by?
So, you know, obviously not given directly to me, but Dita Von Teese has this quote that's, you can be the ripest, juiciest peach in the world, and there's always going to be someone that hates peaches. That has just really stuck with me throughout the duration of my writing career, and especially given how emotionally connected lesfic readers tend to be to books. You know, I want to do a good job, and I want to pour everything I can into these works, but I know at the end of the day, there are going to be some people that aren't going to like the book that I've produced. So I think that, you know, keeping that in perspective, that it still could be a good book. It was just someone didn't like the trope or would prefer like a butch femme romance versus a femme romance, or, you know, something like that. They're just things that, you know, they may want it to be a little different. And I think that's completely fair. But my other favorite quote is the Toni Morrison quote, if there's a book that you want to read that hasn't been written, then you must be the one to write it. So, you know, I think those two things together, like, there was a lot that I wanted to see and that I wanted to read, and I wasn't seeing it. And that's why I decided to start writing at the end of the day, because there were a lot of stories that I wanted to tell and that I was excited about sharing. So yeah, those are really the two biggest pieces. You know, the one gets me motivated and the other keeps me in check as I continue to move forward.
No, that's awesome. Yeah, and those are two great quotes, definitely. I've heard the Toni Morrison one before, and yeah, definitely people, if you wanted to write a book and you can't see it, write it yourself. Oh, sorry, wanting to read a book. So what's next for you then? When's the next book out, and what are the plans?
Yeah, very excited. I just finished my sixth book. So that is with the beta readers right now, and I have most of those edits back, so I've been working on it. And it's actually a celebrity romance, so not a fomance, but a celebrity romance, which I'm very excited. This is my first one. And I've been, really like chomping at the bit to write this. And again, it's crazy. This was another book that I had previously started and shelved for a period of time and just got really inspired again to finish it. So this is done. It'll be published within the next month. And then I am planning on writing the second book of the Lady Luck startup series, which is Carter and her love interest and kind of seeing where things go with them. Professionally, that's where it's at with writing. Personally, we have a garden that we've planted this summer, so it's been really exciting to do that. We need to brush up on our home management skills because winter and fall are going to be fast approaching. So all of kind of those fun things that we're doing as, you know, first-time homeowners, and it's only been about 6 months. So really just excited to kind of settle into life in Philadelphia and, you know, build a life here, build a network of people, all of that kind of good stuff.
Sounds like you're prepared for it, though. But be prepared for some what me and my wife call unsexy spending. That's what happens when you get a house. Lots of unsexy spending.
We know it's going to be a thing, but yeah, overall, we're still super excited about it.
And what's the title of this book that you started in shelves, which clearly seems to be a good process for you? What's the title of the upcoming book?
Perspective.
Okay, great. Yes. So final question, if you could be the love child of any two writers, alive or dead, who would you choose and why?
Yeah, we had kind of discussed this one before, and I spent a lot of time thinking about it. And again, kind of leaning on my framework approach, it was, you know, what would I want to be able to do really well? And one is world building, and one is kind of emotional connection. So in terms of world building, I think, you know, J.K. Rowling, I grew up during the Harry Potter era. I went to midnight magic parties. I had just never felt so immersed in something when I was reading those books as I did kind of joining that world and being a part of it. And then another person that I was reading at that same time was Diana Gabaldon in the Outlander series, which I read probably when I was, you know, 15, which may have been too young to read those, but I did, and I loved them. And I think that both of those writers are master storytellers at building worlds. And then I also spent a lot of my teens and early 20s reading straight romance novels because that was what was kind of available. And I'm a sucker for a good romance story, regardless of the gender of the protagonist, it seems. And Jennifer Crusie was always one of my favorites. She had this book called Bet Me that I absolutely loved, and it had kind of that snark and that witty dialogue, and but also like the thoughtful kind of heartfelt thing. So yeah, I think, you know, if I had to be the love child of any two authors, it would be, I know I kind of cheated the question and picked three, but they're the two of the world building era and the one of kind of the dialogue and the just realistic kind of love and the things that people go through to get there.
Yeah, one could have the egg, one could carry it, and one could be the cheerleader. There you go. And great choices there. And I'll have to look up Jennifer Crusie, did you say it was?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm a big fan of reading straight romance still. I absolutely love quite a few different authors and that. And I think you can learn a lot as well from reading around those people. So finally, tell us where we can find out more about you.
First and most, Twitter. I'm always on Twitter, very responsive on Twitter. Love talking to people on there. So that is just Monica McCallan. And then I do, if you want to sign up for my mailing list, I'm not super prolific with blogging or anything like that, but www.monicamccallan.com. You can sign up there. But again, it's really Twitter by leaps and bounds. Also, if anybody is on the Slack group for the Lesfic Love Slack kind of readers group that's over there, I am on that as well. So love chatting with people on there.
Okay. Yes. And if you're not following Monica on Twitter, what are you doing? Get on it. She's very funny. All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to come and chat with us today on the Lesbian Book Club. It's been fantastic.
All right. Thank you so much, Claire.
Cheers. That's the end of this Lesbian Book Club. So this is me, Claire Lydon, signing off. If you'd like to know any more about me and my books, just hop on over to my website at www.clairelydon.co.uk and you'll find details of all my books, including the London Romance series, the All I Want series, and all of my standalone novels. If you'd like to follow me on social media, I'm most active on Instagram and Twitter, and I'm also around on Facebook. On Instagram, I'm at Claire Fick. On Twitter, I'm at Claire Lydon. And on Facebook, I'm Claire.Lydon. So come on down and follow me there. Also, if you'd like to get a free lesbian romance, just sign up for my VIP Readers Club by heading on over to my website and putting your name and email address into the box at the top of the page. Thanks so much to Denise for hosting and producing this podcast. It's much appreciated. And join me next time for more hot book club action. See you then.